Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, it doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
You're human.
Barely. I'm a lawyer.
I know a lot about the law and various other lawyerings. I'm well-educated, well-versed.
It's a thorny legal issue, all right. I'll need to refer to the case of Finders versus Keepers.
Isn't it true that you have been paid for your testimony?
Yes, you gave me a dollar and some candy.
And yet you haven't said what I told you to say. How can any of us trust you?
How can you be so sure?
Because I was saying to myself, where could he be going at 5 to 7 with that sawed-off shotgun?
Welcome to Opening Arguments, a podcast that pairs a comedian with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC, for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 665. I'm Thomas. Just a guy, doesn't understand real property terms that I'm still mad about from last episode. And that's Andrew, who does understand probably most of those terms. I bet there's a few you don't remember, right?
Oh, absolutely. Lots of goofball Latin stuff I don't understand.
Point is, you're the lawyer, I'm not. How's it going? How are we doing today?
Fantastic that you're still salty about the T3BE question. Those are my absolute favorites.
Well, we don't. Maybe I aced it. We don't know. I mean, yeah. You do, but I don't. Maybe I got it right. Maybe I should be celebrating.
Very true. No, I'm appreciating the saltiness, whether it is, you know, deserved or not. And no, this is also going to be a fun episode because we're going to laugh at morons. That's always a joy. And seriously, beyond kind of the laughing at morons, which is always a joy, part of the thesis of doing this show that was pushed to its breaking point during the Trump administration was that this is not a case where everything is made up and the law doesn't matter. Are there a lot? Yeah. Did we suffer a lot? Yeah. Do we have a lot of work left to do? Yeah. But there are poles that haven't been pushed over yet. And that's important to me because I have spent my life picking out what color to paint those poles, to continue this analogy. So we're going to talk about democracy and lawsuits today.
I love it. Or as you have typed here in the description, LOL suit, which an LOL suit, which I've seen a few times. I've never commented that that's a funny. I feel like that's something that a term that didn't really exist until probably these very people.
Yeah.
But no, there've been so many terrible suits that now an LOL suit is a term of art. Let's get into it. So, Carrie Lake, she's going to be sworn in as governor soon as a result of lawsuit number 70 or whatever it is going to be the one that does it, right?
Maybe not. So, you might recall Carrie Lake lost the governorship of Arizona race by 17,116 votes. That is two-thirds of a percent. I know it's too thin of a margin, but that's two-thirds of a percent. That is a non-trivial amount, right? That is outside many states, you know, that have mandatory recounts that kick in at 0.5%. That's outside the mandatory recount amount, right? It's outside the margin by which Joe Biden won Georgia in 2020, for example. So, you know, this is not like 500 votes in Florida deciding the presidential election. This is a loser who lost. And by the way, didn't Liz Dye tell us about her being sanctioned and getting Alan Dershowitz sanctioned 2 weeks ago? Yes, she did. Carrie Lake and her lawyers, who include the aforementioned Captain Underpants, Mr. Dershowitz, were sanctioned for filing a nonsense complaint to try and force the state of Arizona to use paper ballots, which Arizona already uses paper ballots. And that was the, they were citing the cyber ninjas as proof of concept, even though it took the cyber ninjas like half a year to conduct their audit. And, you know, I was just, so they got Rule 11. And since we spent an entire segment on it, I will read you only the most delightful parts of that Rule 11 sanctions, which go back, re-listen. Here's the court imposing sanctions on Alan Dershowitz. These statements, that is, being made in your complaint, are wrong. The First Amended complaint did not presume that Arizona uses paper ballots and is in fact alleged and implied the contrary. This is clear from the outset. Paragraph 7 of the complaint summarizes the case. Through this action, plaintiffs seek an order that defendants collect and count votes through a constitutionally acceptable process which relies on tried and true precepts that mandates integrity and transparency. This includes votes cast by hand on verifiable paper ballots that maintains voter anonymity, votes counted by human beings, not by machines, and votes counted with transparency and in a fashion observable to the public, quoting paragraph 7. Paragraph 153 is more explicit, stating that plaintiffs seek for this court to order an election conducted by paper ballot as an alternative to the current framework, end of quote. An alternative framework, this is now back to the court ordering sanctions, is necessarily one not presently used. Plaintiffs argue that none of these paragraphs say that Arizona does not use paper ballots. This is true only in the most facile sense. A more reasonable reading of these paragraphs, the only reasonable reading, is that plaintiffs requested that the court order Arizona to do something they contend it is not currently doing, to use paper ballots. Moreover, even if plaintiffs' characterization of these paragraphs were correct, it would serve only to establish a central component of plaintiffs' request for injunctive relief, requiring Arizona to use paper ballots, was entirely frivolous because defendants are already doing what plaintiffs want them to do. There is more. Paragraphs 58 to 60 raise concerns regarding Arizona's purported move from an auditable paper-based system to a computer-based system. And then, you know, there's all the, like, you're lying about that. Everything that the computers do to tabulate leaves an auditable paper-based trail. So Carrie Lake got kicked out of court for lying. So of course, 2 weeks later, she's back, baby. And Trump's lawyer, the potentially indictable felon Christina Bob, took to Twitter to excitedly say, "Here we go. Carrie at Carrie Lake files her election contest!" Exclamation point. Maricopa County ran one of the worst elections in Arizona history, with state officials collaborating with feds to change the outcome of the election. This is the former president's lawyer on Twitter making a demonstrably false allegation. Hashtag Arizona, hashtag election, hashtag Maricopa, hashtag 2022. Bob then went back to her old stomping grounds. Remember, she's technically, quote, a lawyer, but was just a talking head on OAN network for a while. So she went back on OAN, got interviewed by some doofus, and who then proceeded to ask her, "Well, when Carrie Lake wins this lawsuit, could it reinstate Donald Trump as president?" And Christina Bob was like, "Yeah, I don't know. Sure, maybe. Right?
Why not? It's, yeah.
It, why the hell not? Yeah.
What would be?
It's just
what would be the connection? Even on it, let's just for fun, Andrew. Let's just say everything in this idiotic lie of a complaint is right. How would it get Trump to be
it could not. And
what?
Even Bob kind of did a double take. She was like, "Well, you know, you'd have to get other states, but this is not Maricopa County in 2022.
Yeah, you could declare that 2022 every single election was fraudulent and it wouldn't put Trump back in office.
It is just bonkers. So let's dig into just how bonkers this is. As always, using the tried and true OA technique of reading the complaint backwards, we see that this thing was filed by Kurt Olson. And if you're saying that name is familiar, it's not quite Sidney Powell levels of familiar. Kurt Olson is the guy who represents Mike Lindell, who is now in the inner circle with Carrie Lake. So was co-counsel with Dershowitz when Mike Lindell argued that tried to sue the FBI for executing a search warrant and taking his phone in a Hardee's. And that went nowhere. Kurt Olson is a Stop the Steal insurrectionist. He was fired by his firm for making comments that were pro-insurrectionist, which never great to do. He was also part of the team of buffoons in December of 2020, pressuring the Department of Justice to overturn election results. So his name has shown up in materials that were discussed by the 1-6 committee and, in fact, released by the House Committee on Oversight. So bad dude representing the worst of, you know, the bottom of the barrel dregs. So, yeah, Carrie Lake's new lawyer. If you're asking, what's the argument? Oh, boy. Here's the argument. The first thing you need to know is Arizona has two laws that passed apparently before the 2020 election scam that actually do provide courts with the ability to order a do-over of a state election or declare a winner. So Arizona Revised Statute 16-672 says any elector of the state that is a voter may contest the election of any person declared elected to a state office or declared nominated to a state office in a primary or the declared result of an initiated or referred measure or proposal to amend the Constitution of Arizona or other question or proposal submitted to the vote of the people on any of the following grounds. The first three don't matter. It is misconduct on the part of the election boards. That's not alleged here. That the person whose right to the office was not at the time eligible to the office, not alleged here, that the person has given to an elector, inspector, judge, or clerk a bribe or reward, or has offered such bribe or reward for the purpose of procuring his election. Okay, so none of those, but four and five say four on account of illegal votes, and that's it. And five says, by reason of the erroneous count of votes, the person declared elected did not, in fact, receive the highest number of votes for the office. So Arizona has law that says if you think that for whatever reason the person who was elected did not receive the most number of votes and you voted, you can file a lawsuit. And what can the court do if you're correct? That is 16-676. If in an election contest, it appears that a person other than the contestee has the highest number of legal votes, the court shall declare that person elected and that the certificate of the election of the person whose office is contested is of no further legal force or effect. That is subsection C. And subsection B says, after hearing the proofs and allegations of the parties, the court shall file its findings and immediately thereafter shall pronounce judgment, either confirming or annulling and setting aside the election. So
case closed, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, you can get the election declared null and void, or if the counting was erroneous, you can get a declaration from the court that the person that the court thinks got the most number of votes won actually won. I cannot find when this law was passed. I looked. I did ascertain that there was an effort to amend it in 2021, because of course there was, to include presidential electors. That was House Bill 2720, but that failed in the House, in the Arizona state legislature. So, but what that tells me is that this was not something. This is, as soon as I read this, I thought, oh, dipshit Republicans in the Arizona state legislature got this bill passed in 2021 because of crazy
election denialism. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That's what I thought, too. It clearly predates that. It's a terrible idea, but whatever. That's the law.
Well, okay, hold on. Is it? Why do you say it's a terrible idea?
It's a terrible idea in today's climate, I guess I would say. When people are comfortable going into court and either lying or getting an affidavit from a known liar like Russell Ramsland or Terpsichore or Spider or whatever that says, well, I think that there were an illegal number of votes because the voting machines beamed the results to Venezuela where the ghost of Hugo Chavez turned them into vote, right? Like, that's what makes this. In a void? Sure, I can see.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm saying where I'm coming from is I feel like the problem is not the recourse to possibly challenge or overturn a fraudulent election. The problem is proving that it was actually fraudulent in some real sense, isn't it? I mean, I guess I'm holding out for, like, if they start getting more and more control of some of these places where they could actually affect elections and really steal one, maybe this would kind of come back to bite them, wouldn't it?
It could, but let me give you sort of the counter argument in looking at the U.S. presidential election. And this is part of the kind of idiocy and why, you know, the Kraken folks were sort of left with, well, fraud vitiates everything. Mm-hmm. So that means mumble, mumble. Because if you could prove beyond a doubt, right? And let's use a democratic instance, right? Like you could prove beyond a doubt the certification of Palm Beach, Florida was fraudulent in 2000, right? Okay. And so therefore Al Gore received more votes in Florida and therefore was entitled to Florida's electoral votes and should have been the winner of the 2000 presidential election. By the way, completely plausible claim. Suppose you prove that in the middle of 2001. You want to kick George W. Bush out of office?
Sure.
Instate Al Gore and then like retroactively undo the last 6 months?
Yeah, might have saved millions of lives in the Middle East.
I certainly agree that that would have been a better outcome. Yeah. But from a rule of law perspective, like you can't declare a do-over 6 months into a presidential administration.
Ooh, okay, I guess. I don't know. Yeah,
so
I'm not sure.
I just put it there again. We certainly could debate it, but my point is that in the abstract, this actually provides a remedy for if you have claimed fraud in an election. And of course, we're now in a season, and maybe my views are colored by the fact that people alleging fraud tend to be the fraudors rather than the fraudees. But I take your point. In a vacuum, being able to say, oh, here's the remedy for a fraudulent election. If you can prove that there are illegal votes, we'll do a do-over election.
You could, you at least do another election. I mean, I guess where I'm coming from is way back when, or pretty early on in the show, when we talked about a lot of the theories around Russian interference, and that was, you know, the Mueller report and stuff was still unclear. I feel like I asked you this and we talked about this kind of hypothetical of like, all right, what if we did discover that there was just uncontested fraud, actual fraud, and an election was stolen. And maybe it was when we were talking about the Jill Stein kind of fake recount stuff of like, well, what happens if that happens and we're, you know, is what can we do? And I think I seem to remember you saying that beyond a certain date of the, I don't know, the Electoral Count Act as it currently stood.
Yeah, it's the safe harbor provisions of the Electoral
Count. That we're just out of luck.
Right.
And it just sort of feels to me like, okay, so if you successfully steal an election and like a few days go by, then it's fine. Like you can, even if we totally find it out and it's all sussed out, maybe the conspiracy wasn't clear until, you know, a day after whatever the safe harbor thing is, you're just shit out of luck, nothing you can do. It just seems weird to me.
I don't think that that is an unreasonable position. That's fair. I have sort of attempted to give voice to the other side of the argument, which is a much more institutionalist John Roberts kind of argument, a small C conservative. You have to strike a balance between doing that thing and having a disruptive process.
Right. Well, and this is all colored by the fact that impeachment doesn't exist anymore, or rather conviction doesn't exist anymore. I guess in the old paradigm where it's like, oh yeah, you wouldn't undo the election. You would just impeach and convict the person for participating in that fraud. And then
absolutely.
Like that doesn't exist anymore. So
100%, I think if it were the case, right? Suppose that in 2000, suppose we had discovered 6 months into George W. Bush's term. Let me give a counterfactual that absolutely we have no evidence happened, and that I don't think did happen. Suppose we discovered a Watergate level break-in conspiracy. We have the receipts of bribes to various officials in Palm Beach County to understate vote totals for Al Gore. Just as clear a case as you could possibly get, right? Not one that we have. I'm making a counterfactual.
Yep.
I think in 2000 that you would have had sufficient votes. You would have had sufficient votes to get George W. Bush the hell out of office. And I think you would have had sufficient votes to make Al Gore, you would have had a vote to make Al Gore the Speaker of the House. And then they would have impeached Bush and Cheney simultaneously, making Al Gore president. That would have been the remedy that would have been proposed. And I think, there would have been holdouts. I think Jesse Helms was still in the Senate back then and hadn't died, rest in peace in hell. There would have been holdouts. But by and large, I think that would have happened. I think that ship has sailed in a post-Trump era.
All right. Well, the reason I asked is I did want to make sure that was where the disagreement was and not something about the law that you just read that I wasn't factoring in.
Yeah, that's right.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
So now you have the right to allege that there were illegal votes and or that the person who was declared elected, Katie Hobbs, did not in fact receive the highest number of votes. Okay, but you still got to prove that, right? So what are the arguments? Well, this complaint alleges two principal arguments. And if you're asking, are they ridiculous? Oh boy, do they not disappoint. The first is an argument about mismatched signatures. And this begins on page 13. And I think this is really, really instructive because this really goes to show you what Republicans want when they say, oh, well, we want to have signature matching because, you know, especially when you vote by mail, you don't want to have fraud and how could it possibly hurt and this and that. And I actually got into a bit of a dispute with fellow Democrats when we were talking about the Colorado process. And I said, you know, yeah, it would be even better minus the signature matching requirement. And people said, look, like our system works fine. And in fairness, it appears to work well. But I think signature matching is a technique to try and disenfranchise voters. This lawsuit accidentally says the quiet part loud. They talk about taking first a sample. This begins on page 15 at paragraph 51, in which they say a signature review of 230,000 of the 1.9 million ballot envelopes using the same control signatures available to Maricopa County revealed the following stunning discrepancies. Oh, by the way, both of these are in Maricopa County. That's where the allegations are. Okay. So it says 18,022 signatures had egregious mismatches to the reference signatures, which were plainly seen at first glance. Mm. This equates to 8.5% of the ballot envelopes reviewed, meaning that of the 1.9 million ballot envelopes, approximately 156,000 ballot envelopes were likely to have egregious signature mismatches. So you're sitting there thinking like, okay, and then there's another sample that shows 9%, so 9.1%. So you really think that signature mismatches should throw out one ballot in 10? That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is batshit levels of disenfranchisement. It gets worse. Paragraph 54, they use the testimony of expert poll workers. So I'm just going to read this one to you.
But I also love under there, if we were to take it as good faith, they think that 10% of people voted as someone else? Is that what? Oh,
yes. It gets, hold on.
That's a lot of people.
Paragraph 54. For the 2022 general election, there were approximately 32 workers involved in Maricopa County's signature verification and counting process. These workers have signed sworn declarations concerning their experience at Maricopa County. The three witnesses testified that their and their co-workers' rejection rates while verifying signatures ranged from 35 to 40%.
Okay, What do they think is happening? What
So and then, by the way, at the end of the day, only 587 ballots were tossed for mismatch in Maricopa County. So, you know, a fraction of a fraction of a percent, which is what you would hope in any system that is actually meant to detect fraud and not broadly disenfranchise 40% of people who vote by mail. But yeah, they said that one out loud. So just remember that the next time, you know, Republicans are talking about adding a signature verification in a state where they have insufficient voter suppression laws, This is what they want. They want it to be used to toss out, I don't know, every other vote that is cast by mail. And the fact that that's going to sweep up 20 or 30% of their votes, they don't care, because they can't win when all the votes get counted. They have to put their thumb on the scale to exclude votes, and that's going to exclude some of their voters. They don't care.
It's staggering. I mean, it's not, there's not even a pretense of like, yeah, this will protect us from fraud. It's like, no, this just will help us win. So
yeah, that's
shouldn't count. Nobody in the world could think that half of voters are voting stealing mail-in ballots. Yeah,
that's right. There's a broad-based conspiracy to forge 40% of the mail-in ballots in Maricopa County. That is the degree to which it requires you to believe that is just, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, that's their number one argument.
Oh, okay.
So would you like to know their number two argument?
Yeah. Now, here's my question. Are they saving the best for last? Are they gearing up to?
Their number two argument has to deal with printers. Okay. And
oh,
if you're picturing like the Office Space, like PC load letter, like, yeah, here's the argument to the best of my ability. And mind you, I do not speak crazy person, so it's possible I've got this slightly wrong. This is what I think is being said. Some of the ballots that were printed either with light ink in the printer or with the like paper tray shoved in the wrong way, so they came out crooked.
Mm.
And so as a result, when you then took those ballots that were filled in, when you fed that into the ballot tabulators, and here I am quoting from the complaint, and also it's got some text messages from election workers freaking out about it. They were, quote, 50-50 on reading these light ballots.
Okay?
So here's what you had to do. You could rerun them through the ballot tabulators a couple of times. And God knows, you know, what conspiracy theories that's going to engender, right? That we've already been through that one. Or when it didn't work, you had to drive them back to the county board to get counted. That's all that it is, right?
Yeah.
And so we have some text messages that say, tabulators aren't reading ballots. It's maybe 50-50. Ballots are coming out crooked. I'm having a 9-11, which I think is supposed to be a 911, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, right. Tabulators aren't reading. Then later on is a late in the day. What is the current record for T-Tech mileage on election day? Because I'm at 166. Okay. And again, shouldn't have had to have driven 166 miles, but that is a dozen plus trips back and forth to the election center to come back. And then one of the texts says, Worship and Word Church still has at least 50. They had lines around the building all day. I'll help break equipment down when they close unless told otherwise. Follow up. I was wrong. 50 inside and about 100 outside still waiting. Coffee, please. Now, you or I would read that and go, yeah, wow. There were these printer errors. Most of them were fixed by 11:30. The Board of Election Supervisors of Maricopa County notes that by mid-afternoon, most sites were no longer experiencing the printer issue. But the result of that, right, of not being able to instantly feed your ballot into the tabulator and have it be counted, was to slow down these polling sites. And you and I have...
Oh, it wasn't to just have them say, just put them all for Biden.
That's nope.
Not how they handled it.
It is. Okay. It is just the allegations in the complaint are just that it's delayed.
Okay.
And that some people got out of line.
Again, and those were all going to vote for Carrie Lake.
We're gonna get to that one in a minute. But look, there's a paragraph from eight people who testified that they had a 90-minute wait, a 120-minute wait, a 2 to 3 hour wait.
Yeah, that sucks.
That sucks, yeah. Okay? Did this issue cause a delay? It 100% did. This is a really good reason why we ought to have extended vote-by-mail periods.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you're not at the whim of the printer pulling a PC load letter. So as you might suspect, there was a long delay, and sometimes people gave up and decided not to vote. It's not the standard for election fraud anywhere, of course. And you've also cut to the punchline, which is Maricopa County went 51-49 for Katie Hobbs. So, you know, how you prove that anybody who left lines were, you know, a Lake voter or a Hobbs voter is covered by paragraph 75, which I have to read to you because it's just too funny. Although widespread across Maricopa County, a bipartisan county, this voter suppression, not voter suppression, did not affect Republican and Democrat voter equally. For November 8th, 2022 Election Day voting, Republican voters significantly outnumbered Democrat voters statewide, with an even greater delta for Election Day voting specifically in Maricopa County. Thus, it cannot be disputed that the tabulator breakdowns on Election Day impacted Republican voters more than Democrat voters. It absolutely can be disputed. Wow. Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Well, I guess I agree to the allegations in paragraph 75. No, of course not. So the relief sought is setting aside the certified result of the 2022 Arizona gubernatorial election, declaring that Carrie Lake is the winner, or in the alternative, vacating the results of the election and an injunction requiring that Maricopa County reconduct the gubernatorial election. By the way, I read you the provision for relief, which includes a statewide reelection, but what they want is just
the county.
Reelection only in Maricopa County. Excluding all improper votes under the direction of a special master, with the recusal of defendants Hobbs and Richer from further participation in matters involving the 2022 general election, including any new election and any review of the issues related to the 2022 general election and any new election. None of that is in the statute. All of that is absolutely bonkers, and we are headed towards another Rule 11 sanctions against Carrie Lake's lawyers. So,
oh boy.
Kurt Olson, insurrectionist weirdo and proven liar, congratulations, because you're about to be on the hook for the attorney's fees incurred in connection with litigating this nonsense suit. Why am I confident of that?
Could it be their sterling batting average?
Yeah, they're doing great. And just to keep things moving, we just received confirmation by the 10th Circuit that certain sanctions imposed in 2021 in one of the Dominion lawsuits were upheld. Not, by the way, Dominion's defamation lawsuits, which are continuing to run against the propagators of the big lie. And in fact, next week, Rupert Murdoch is scheduled to be deposed in connection with one of the Dominion defamation cases. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm looking forward to that one. We talked about this very, very briefly when it was filed. This was 2 years ago over Christmas, December 22nd, 2020. In Colorado federal court, a bunch of random voters filed perhaps the silliest election denying lawsuit. And you're saying that's a really, really high bar.
We just covered a pretty silly one.
How about one which purports to represent, which purports to be a class action? And if you're saying, who's the class? The class is everybody who voted in the election.
Yeah.
So that's page 81. But this is monstrously long. Their conduct, that is, the evil Democrats who stole the election, has negatively affected the entire world, capital W world, because this was written by a four-year-old. However, the plaintiffs represent a designated class of persons that have standing to sue, i.e. the registered voter. The plaintiffs and those similarly situated have birth certificates, driver's licenses, social security cards, and are on the jury rolls. These registered voters have an interest in choosing the President of the United States as the chief executive officer and the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. So, yeah, they attempted to bring a class action on behalf of the entire United States.
What about the ones who voted for Biden?
They threw in a constitutional challenge to Section 230 of the Telecommunications Decency Act, because why not? It was just garbanzo, like absolutely insane. And the linchpin was that they could sue under 42 U.S. Section 1983, that is deprivation of your civil rights under color of state law, because Dominion is really a state actor because they run the elections, right? Which is kind of like arguing that the manufacturer of number two pencils is a state actor, right? Like,
exactly.
Look,
government uses them, yeah.
Yeah, it's bizarre. The complaint is so bad, like they didn't even do their own work. They made reference to other bogus Kraken law complaints. So, for example, paragraph 202 says, on November 25th, 2020, former U.S. Attorney Sidney Powell Esquire, hereinafter referred to as Attorney Powell, on behalf of a group of Georgia voters, filed a complaint in federal court for emergency relief to decertify the results of the general election for the office of president. And then a bunch of just repeating verbatim the frivolous elements of Sidney Powell's frivolous lawsuit in Georgia. Coupled with paragraph 282, as in Georgia on December 1st, Attorney Powell, on behalf of two Wisconsin voters, filed a complaint in federal court for declaratory emergency and permanent injunctive relief. They forgot that word. Naming defendants herein, WC defendants and Mr. Evers in their official capacity, and then a whole bunch of that. So look, so this complaint was nonsense from the moment that it was filed. And the court was like, this sure seems to be nonsense, and gave them kind of multiple outs to try and fix the problem. Again, remember Rule 11, you get a 21-day safe harbor period to withdraw your nonsense pleadings, which, you know, they decided not to.
No, we got it right. You heard us.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, all the defendants moved to dismiss, as the appellate court says, on various grounds, including that the plaintiffs lacked standing because they sought only to assert non-justiciable generalized grievances. The plaintiffs opposed the motion to dismiss, but then moved for leave to file an amended complaint that would add in new plaintiffs and new claims under RICO, because they read somewhere that RICO allows you to do that. I don't know. They sued Dominion, they sued Facebook, and they sued a bunch of state officials. Ultimately, the plaintiffs voluntarily dismissed out their claims against the state officials, but left in their complaints against Dominion and Facebook. And so
those
then
were the meritorious ones.
Right. And so the district court granted the motion to dismiss and said, yeah, you're just like complaining about election stuff, but Dominion is not a state actor. Facebook is not a state actor. This is absolutely bonkers. Go home. And then everybody moved for sanctions. Yeah. And
did we get another sanctions fire sale?
Yeah.
Come on down to the courthouse. Put yourself into brand new sanctions.
It's sanctions against everybody, right? Because of course they did. The attorneys then appealed those up to the 10th Circuit. And it is my pleasure to tell you, as of late last week, the 10th Circuit upheld those sanctions against everybody. And I want to bring this full circle to what's happening in Trump world in Florida. So in upholding the sanctions, and they were sanctions of nearly $200,000 against these lawyers, the district court found that there was no good faith basis for believing or asserting that plaintiff had standing to bring the claims that they did, because there was no individual particularized harm alleged, and no reasonable attorney would have believed plaintiffs as registered voters and nothing more had standing to bring the suit. This finding is amply supported in the record. Yet the attorney's efforts to distinguish this case and the other dismissed lawsuits were either self-contradictory, i.e. claiming that this suit is brought against private entities and not governmental entities, or nonsensical and precluded by Supreme Court case law, such as the suggestion that seeking money damages rather than an injunction as a remedy makes plaintiffs' claimed injury sufficiently particularized to form a basis for standing. At the hearing on the motions to dismiss, the district court explicitly gave the sanctioned counsel the opportunity to distinguish the many adverse cases cited by defendants, but he was not able meaningfully to do so or to meaningfully explain how the proposed amended complaint established the plaintiff's standing. And when the district court asked him to identify the plaintiff's most supportive case to establish standing, he cited Terry versus Adams, which involved whether a private entity was, it was a 1953 U.S. Supreme Court case, which involved whether a private entity was engaged in state action, Brown versus Board of Education, which you know, and Anderson versus Celebrezzi, a 1983 case, U.S. Supreme Court case, which held that a state could not impose an earlier filing deadline for independent candidates. Those cases neither addressed the requirements for standing nor established that the plaintiffs in this case had a particularized injury. I could go on. The best part is at the end. When questioned by the district court, the sanctioned attorneys could not identify a single case supporting the proposition that a federal court sitting in state A has personal jurisdiction over an official of state B regarding actions taken by that official with regard to elections within state B. The attorneys contended that the defendants could have consented to personal jurisdiction in the Colorado court. But as the district court stated, it is inconceivable to have ever thought that state officials of Pennsylvania or Michigan would voluntarily waive personal jurisdiction and come to a Colorado federal court to answer charges about acts taken during the administration of Pennsylvania or Michigan elections. End of quote.
So there's forum shopping, and then there's forum shopping, yeah. Is what it sounds like.
That is exactly right. And then as a backup, they said, well, you know, and in any event, I mean, making us pay $200,000 just because we tried to overthrow an election seems like a lot. And it is a lot. Like, it would be real bad if my firm got hit with $200,000 in sanctions. The court was hearing none of this. It says, moreover, the attorneys failed to convince us that the award was excessive and unreasonable. In applying the abuse of discretion standard, we consider whether the district court's determination appears reasonable in light of the complexity of the case, the number of strategies pursued, and the responses necessitated by the other party's maneuvering. The case was complex, with the plaintiffs initially pursuing a number of constitutional claims and then moving to add additional claims, including RICO allegations. They also sought to represent a nationwide class of registered voters.
Something that is so stupid, I can't believe I'm typing it right now.
And although the disposition ultimately turned on the plaintiff's standing and whether they could overcome the generalized grievance doctrine, the defendants also had to address other issues, for example, whether they, as non-governmental entities, could be sued under Section 1983, and in Facebook's case, the potential effect of Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, and then finally, and this is just a wham line. Moreover, the plaintiffs set extraordinarily high monetary stakes, requesting nominal damages amounting to $160 billion. And because again, right, 160 million people, they wanted $1,000 per voter. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, nominal
how
damages.
How much is a stolen election worth to you?
Yeah, $160 billion. So, yeah, don't go asking for $160 billion and like start tossing around RICO against everyone if you don't want to get hit with 200 grand in sanctions. So you love to see it. It is the 10th Circuit. The lawyers have said that they're going to appeal this to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
I feel super confident in saying the Supreme Court
is not. That's going to get expedited relief out of that.
Yeah, will not grant cert. And, you know, maybe this is the find out portion of the graph. So so there you go. Democracy live and well. I know.
Okay, that's way too far. What are you talking about? You had me and you lost me.
No, look, like we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work ungerrymandering things, right? Like we have a lot of work to do to restore access to the ballot box. But if you're looking at efforts to overturn the election, they continue to be on an Ofer streak that will get you benched.
Right. Efforts that are this stupid, that are after the fact, that are for candidates who definitely lost, don't work. But if you, you know, win a few elections at the state level and start getting more control over how elections go, you may still be able to steal elections in 2024 in a way that's going to be much harder for us to stop. So I would not say democracy alive and well, Andrew. I would say
I accept your clarification and agree.
All right. Well, that's fun. It is nice to hear when terrible lawyers have sanctions paid.
Get what's
to them.
Coming to them.
I just want their this should be like a cottage industry of Trump lawyers. Please sue us because then we can get our fees paid for. It's free money, you know, like we just attorney's fees. That's got to be a nice, exciting letter or whatever you receive. Most times you get sued, I'm sure it's like, oh, stressful. You get sued by these idiots. It's like, oh, payday. Here we go. Rack up some legal bills for free. And that's our show, Andrew. Sounds like we may have another Liz Dye episode coming up very soon. So that's
woohoo.
When next you will hear us. Always fun to have Liz on the show. So we'll see you then. Thanks for listening.
I move for a bad court thingy.
You mean a mistrial?
Yeah, that's why you're the judge and I'm the law talking guy.
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it will be a big help if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to join the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/yodelmountain and follow us on Twitter at openargs. This This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC, all rights reserved. It is produced with the assistance of transcriptionist Heather Loveridge, production assistant Ashley Smith, and additional contributions from Morgan Stringer and Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our live shows and heads up the OA Wiki. Follow at OA Wiki on Twitter. Additional thanks to the moderators of the Opening Arguments Facebook community, Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian Ziegenhagen, and Teresa. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith, who edits the show and created the fabulous theme music, which was used with permission.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.